Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math.
Come along and join correspondent Ruth Carlson for a visit with the nuns who craft and share CBD oils at Sisters of the Valley in Merced, California. Nuns who promote smoking pot sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit, but it's reality in the central California town of Merced. The Sisters of the Valley produce marijuana CBD oils marketed and targeted specifically for medicinal purposes. The nuns believe it's part of their spiritual journey to help people escape pain. And if folks notice the nuns' habits and stop for a chat, they're elated to share and assist. Have a listen to Sister Kate's story of their amazing journey evolving the CBD-infused oil culture in the Central Valley with correspondent Ruth Carlson.
Drop the coin right into the slot.
My name is Sister Kate, and I'm with Sisters of the Valley.
And my name is Sister Sophia, and I'm with Sisters of the Valley.
So, Sisters of the Valley, a fascinating story. Tell me how it started. Tell me what it is.
Sisters of the Valley is a New Age order of nuns, basically. We live together, work together, pray together, and take vows. And we were born of the Occupy movement. We were born a lack of America to provide a proper social net. We were born of an exhaustion from women bearing the brunt of all poverty in all societies since Christianity became widespread and forced across the planet. And we were born of a need to take care of ourselves and to do it in a spiritual environment and to work with plant-based medicine because the pharmaceutical culture was basically killing our children.
How did it actually start, though? Who started it?
Okay, I would be the crazy person who started it. It started in the fall of 2011, and you have to understand where my head was. I had just come out of a divorce where I'd worked my butt off for 10 years building a consulting company, and my ex-husband took all the money. I had over $1 million in savings and left me poor and penniless with 3 children, and there was no one to fight and no one to fight for me because it is legal to steal from your spouse in this country. It's not stealing if they move all the money into their name, regardless if it was a premeditated divorce. So I was left with the choice of, I had middle school approaching high school children, of rebuilding my life. And I came to California, and the 4-day trip across country, moving in with my brother and his 2 boys in the Central Valley of California. Because we decided to join forces. He had gone through a financially devastating divorce. I went through a financially devastating divorce. He had 2. I had 3. We might as well be in one house and share all our bills. And on the way across the country, he was explaining to me how the cannabis laws were changing. And away across the country, I was trying to figure out how I was going to make a living when I could no longer travel and leave my children. So by the time we landed here, I'd pretty much decided I was going to look into what a cannabis collective would be, what that would take, because he had the land for it. So that's what started me growing cannabis. That's what started a collective. And then a few years later, as I'm doing that, and I'm feeling very much like a nun, because the only people I could deliver cannabis to were the sick and dying and the severely neurologically impaired. And I had 6 kids living under my roof from 14 to 21 that I fed every day. So I felt, you know, cross between a nun and a slave. And at this time, the Occupy movement comes out, and everything, the first thing I did is look up their goals and their missions and what they stood for, and everything resonated with me. And when I said, you know, when I encouraged the kids to go with me to the Occupy protest, they did. So I had like a small army with me, probably could double the amount of people at a protest in Merced with just bringing my crew. But the significant moment was the day Michelle Obama tried to talk to Congress about how unhealthy our children's meals are. This also happened in October of 2011. And our Congress filibustered and met a week later on taxpayer dollar to declare pizza a vegetable so that our children's meals would look healthier than they are. And when Congress declared pizza a vegetable, I declared myself a nun. On that day, I started going to protests and to Occupy events in black and white traditional nun garb because I happened to have a Halloween costume in a bin. And I got what I thought was my 15 minutes of fame as Sister Occupy, But in 4 years of protests, it created a four-year dialogue with the women of California and the men, and it resulted in the creation of the Sisters of the Valley.
Fascinating. I'm actually number 5 out of 10 children, so I understand how you would feel. My mother, I don't know how she did it. Yeah, and we're only 13 years apart. We grew up in Iowa, not California, but we moved here later. But I can only imagine. It's interesting to me. I mean, you could be doing this without wearing the traditional habit. I grew up Catholic. I'm used to this, the habit that nuns wear. They don't wear them much anymore in many places. But you guys have the old-fashioned habits. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, my cheeky answer to that is our beliefs are based on the ancient beliefs of the Beguin ancestors in the castles of Europe, who were the first nurses in the castles of Europe, and the beliefs of the Native American people indigenous to the land we walk on and work on today here. And in the formation of those beliefs, I knew we needed a uniform to symbolize our work, and I could have offended the Native Americans or offended the Catholic nuns. And so it's pretty obvious which one I reached for. The Native Americans still wear their traditional dress, and the Catholic nuns don't. And of course, out on my protests, I'd run into Catholic nuns, and they'd say, "Why are you dressed like that?" And I'd say, "Why are you dressed like that?" Because they'd be in their shorts and tennis shoes and tennis shirts. Anyway, we'd have a good giggle and have a lemonade together and share. And over the years, we've developed a little bit of a following with Catholic nuns. Like every year, we can pretty much count on getting gifts from convents around the world and letters of support because many of them feel like we're doing the work they would do but if they weren't inside the patriarchy.
You'll love this story. My mother was quite the dresser. I mean, we had 10 kids, so she got bargains. But when I was a kid and the nuns decided they would wear regular clothes, not their habits, she said, "They don't know how to dress. No, they should be back in their habits." Yes. Anyway, so marijuana as a form of spirituality, that's kind of fascinating to me. Now, is it all CBD or is it also, kind of two questions in there, is it also the other kind of marijuana?
Marijuana doesn't really factor into our spirituality in any way. Our spirituality is based on being farm women who make healing plants and try to get knowledge out to the people about plant-based medicine. So even though there are some sisters who will partake in high THC weed only on a full moon or only on a new moon, or like it might be part of their own individual practices, they're not part of our group practices. Our group practices are more about arranging our lives by the cycles of the moon, and that's intentional, just like our dress is intentional, is to be a meditation to put us in touch with our ancient mothers and work to make them always be proud of us. Our uniforms, as well as our moon cycle services, are a way of keeping Mother Earth at the center of all of our spirituality. I think that pretty much sums it up.
Have you gotten any criticism from the Catholic Church or other churches saying you shouldn't be doing this?
The sheriff and the mayor and the men who run the Central Valley were outraged. Outraged that I came to their city council meetings as a sister. Outraged that I started having more sisters. And I remember in like my second year, the Merced Sun Star printed an article about Polish nun outraged at weed nuns. And I had to laugh and say, look, they had to go all the way to Poland to get a nun to rag about us.
I love that. So tell me about the ranch. How big is it? How many nuns live there? How many people? Is it an order? Is it like a religious order, do you call it?
We would. I remember I was interviewed by the media recently, and he said, "Sister Kate, over here it says 6 live there, and over here you said 3 live here, and over here you said 5 live there, and over here you said you had 12. And I said, "Dude, you realize they don't want us doing this, right? You realize that the law will take any reason to shut us down at any time, because the fact that I was a self-declared nun who created a self-declared order, which really, if these white guys would think about it, so was Saint Scholastica. I mean, if she was the first Catholic nun and her picture hangs on every order, she was also self-declared, guys. And they were so outraged and offended on behalf of Catholic nuns that they've tried many times, many ways to shut us down. So they will not let me build a monastery on my 1 acre farm. It won't happen. So what we do is we have anywhere from 3 to 5 sisters living there at any one time. time. And then officially I say three, so they leave me alone. But it could be 3 to 6 of us maybe comfortably can live in 2 houses on a 1-acre farm. And then we've sprouted other places, some rental apartments, another house that's 3.5 miles away. Sister Cass and Brother Rudy got their own house because they have 2 girls together. So we're trying to be more like the Mennonites, where we don't have to live on top of each other, but we're all very close.
You support yourselves by selling your products. Do you let people come and tour your property?
We do let people come and tour, but we don't just let any people come and tour. We try to protect the energy of the medicines. We believe that if we make our medicine in a spiritual environment, if we make our topical salves and our oils and even our mushroom coffee in a spiritual environment, that energy follows the medicine and goes to the people. And we can't prove that scientifically, but we also have faith that one day science will prove that the medicine that is made in an environment of sloppiness and contempt is not going to be as effective as medicine that is made in a spiritual environment that's very clean and quiet and pure, and no words of contempt are ever spoken around the medicine. That's what we're about, and that's what we support ourselves on. Over 50% of our sales are from a topical salve that we just put it out there to the world saying, hey, this science has been suppressed for 100 years, and you need to put the salve on your ouchies and tell us what it does. And that was 9 years ago, and people came back with a myriad of things that the salve does, including putting it on their toothaches and earaches and strange things that I would never do with a topical salve, replacing their sleeping pills by putting it on their temples at night, preventing migraines by putting a dab behind the ear in the morning, clearing up chronic eczema and clearing up diaper rash and things like that. So that is our staple, our topical salve. But we've branched out, of course, and we provide CBD oil drops. And now we're getting into mood stabilizing mushroom coffee. But we are privately owned. And I founded the Sisters of the Valley, so I own it. But we also have made an infrastructure for the other sisters to launch their own small businesses. And we're really about growing more Sisters of the Valley through more ownership of business and property of the women.
The Catholic Church is having a very tough time, from what I understand. I'm a recovering Catholic, you never get over that. Getting nuns, getting priests, but it sounds like you're growing. It sounds like you have people that want to enter your order, which is not Catholic, but it is an order.
Yes, we have lots of people that want to join us, and lots of crazy on the planet that has been let go with the pandemic and Trump preceding that. So we have to go very carefully. We were actually growing, and then the pandemic caused us to contract. One of the occupational hazards of gathering people who only care about natural healing is that when a pandemic comes, the least and most vulnerable of their tribe that they were born into need them. So like a third of our people scattered to the winds to go be with immune system challenged or very elderly people who are going to be locked in and had to be the warrior and savior for them, and we didn't necessarily get all of them back. So we went through this period of contraction. We are growing again, ironically, the most probably in Mexico. And we do have a sister in Sweden with sort of a Northern Baltic, is that what she calls themselves? Nordic country enclave, and some initial sisters that are interested in starting up enclaves there. We have Sister Maria who just went back to New Zealand, and we believe she is just going to stay there and focus on the mushroom coffee business. And yeah, we are growing and we have a lot of interest, but we don't really have all of the tools for weeding out the crazy.
None of us do. Well, that's fascinating, though. This is the first I've heard. I've read all the articles about you, but that it's spreading internationally. That's phenomenal. How did that happen?
Oh, yeah, we do in Brazil. Here's the thing, like in Brazil. We have 4 sisters in Brazil, but they pretty much have to act covertly, and they're all involved in the filmmaking industry, and they're all involved in changing the laws on cannabis. So they have to be quiet, and we don't write a lot about them. In New Zealand as well, they voted against the plant. So Maria came here, closed what she was doing there, and came here. I say we get whiplash from all the pivoting we have to do. But it really is, if they can't make a living, there's no point, because what we're about is creating jobs. We think the gentle way of healing the planet is by just having women own and control more stuff. So if we can't create commerce, then they're there doing activism to make the ground fertile for commerce coming.
2 questions. I'd love to know if you have like a daily schedule, but also you mentioned that men are involved with you too. I don't know if they live there or if they're just affiliated with you, but if you can touch on both those.
Daily schedules are always an interesting question because we're a women empowerment organization. So You know, it's like make your schedule, figure out what works for you. And I mean, the only problem we'd have anyone's schedule is if they didn't have one. Right? Because we just want to see some routine that's healthy for them and healthy for the business. And we encourage people to find what works for. The young girls like to be up late. The older women, we like to rise with the roosters. You're not going to change that. You have to work with that. And so that's all I have to say about schedules. And then as far as the men, yes, we never intended. The Beguines had their brothers, the Beguines and the Castles of Europe. 15 to 20% of the men within their enclave, the people within their enclave walls were men. But the thing is, the women controlled everything. The women owned anything. In order to keep it that way, they probably had to keep their numbers down to 1 out of 5. But the women made the decisions. The women ran the business. So we have our brothers, too. And of our 6 vows, one of them is chastity, but it doesn't require celibacy. Our definition of chastity is celibacy, to be modest in dress and style and clothing and appearance. So like sexy isn't our brand basically, but we also would never tell people not to have intimacy in an intimacy challenged world where intimacy can be a magnificent healer. So basically the way we live is that the women live at the enclave. There are no men that live there right now. That doesn't mean we don't have enclaves where men don't live, where couples didn't start them, for example, in Sweden. And it doesn't mean that necessarily the sisters take a vow of celibacy. They live it there, but what I say is if they want to get their chakras aligned, they have to do it away from the enclave, but that's their business. And I also say that we kind of practice living alone together. There's certain things that make people happy, and one of them is to exercise their rights to intimacy. Another is a right to privacy. So the way we live is we try to give each other that space.
Now, you obviously didn't found it. Sister Kate did. So why did you decide to join the order?
I decided to join Sister Kate after having gone through my own personal journey. I used to live in Michigan. I've only been in California since 2019, which is when I took my vows. I took my vows in 2019 as Sister Sophia. However, what motivated me to join Sister Kate was my own past and history with the plant and my daughter having cancer. And then throughout, you know, raising her after she survived her ordeal with cancer, I had made like a pact with God, Source, Creator, whatever that energy is out there that I am attached to. I'm Greek Orthodox, you know, so I understand the whole Catholic thing. I married into Catholic and I went to church for many, many years. But what I wanted to do was establish a foundation of giving back because cannabis saved my daughter's life. And I wanted to do it in a spiritual way. And I wanted to do it with women that were called forward because of the plant and through activism, because the plant has been suppressed for so long. So when I saw her little 60-second blip on Facebook, and this was in late 2016, early 2017, I couldn't get it out of my head. It had anchored and seeded in my heart. You guys know what that feels like, right? When you're just called to do something, where you can't escape the thought and the feeling of it. I knew right then and then I had to leave my corporate job, find my way to California. I knocked on Sister Kate's door for, I think, 6-7 months, and her gatekeepers let me in because, you know, we go through an extensive vetting process. We have to. We don't just let anybody walk through these doors. And they let me in, and we interviewed, and I started a small wholesale business under the Sisters of the Valley brand name 3 hours north of here. And the rest is history. Now I'm living on the farm. But yeah, that was my calling. I saw her, and it was an immediate thing.
It's fascinating. So you've seen a lot of changes in the city of Merced, the whole downtown revitalization. And first of all, has Merced been welcoming to you? And also, what do you think about all the downtown changes?
My cheekiest answer is that we made it graceful and charming. But I don't think we can take credit for it, really. Yes, I've seen a lot of change here. And all my life, I changed cities, states, and continents every 7 years. So this has been a long run of it. And I am so grateful that the UC is here. It has completely changed the vibe. It's completely changed the standard of our city councils, not in the small towns yet, but in the bigger towns. Like, it used to be that the sheriff's guys had every city council stacked, every governing board stacked with their guys. And the UCs have changed all that. They've basically run the sheriff off the boards because why are the lawmakers also making the laws? It doesn't make sense. That doesn't happen in big cities. But small towns, they get away with that. And so I've seen a refreshing change to our city councils. It's brought in a refreshing change to the town. More importantly, though, the changing of cannabis laws makes your law enforcement understand anxiety disorders. And that was something I never expected. Like if I had a crystal ball and somebody asked me 15 years ago, what do you think will be the greatest benefit of cannabis decriminalization and safe access? I would have never guessed that our law enforcement would, their IQ for anxiety disorders would expand exponentially. And all of a sudden, they quit treating everybody who acts crazy like they're a criminal. And they start wondering, what drug are they on? And then they start wondering, dude, why aren't you just taking cannabis? So there's an IQ that grows in a town, even a backward town, from decriminalization of things like cannabis and mushrooms, because law enforcement is forced to face the reality of anxiety orders, which are really our national problem, not crime.
Now that's interesting. I talked to Kat with the, she has the gay organization here.
Drag
that
Queen.
Yes. Yeah. And she was saying that they work very closely with the police, which it sounded wonderful. They have a good relationship, and she has educated them on LGBTQ. I'm always have a hard time remembering all the acronyms. So do you interact with Merced, with the students? So do you guys go and talk to them?
Yeah, we come when called, basically. So, like, if a woman from Stanislaus County, they're not going to allow her in her family's four-generation nursery to grow and sell baby cannabis plants, and we might get called up to a city council meeting to attend. Their opening of the LGBTQ center here in town, we were at the ribbon cutting for that. Any Black Lives Matter things we went to because we had to educate ourselves in that regard. We were not aware of really a lot of things we were stupid to until we started going to Black Lives Matter and understanding their national anthem and their issues. And so we tend to go when we're called. And then there's some fights we push on ourselves, like when they try to put a very corrupt police chief on a small town near us. We were very out leading that fight, and we lost. But it doesn't matter sometimes. Part of our culture, what we wanted to build into our life, is that everybody in their life has their work, has their spirituality, and has their activism. And where I was most influenced during the Occupy movement, I had the great opportunity to listen to a 85-year-old man who had fought for miners' rights in Ireland and England and eventually Australia and New Zealand. And he talked about their culture, the Welsh culture of after church every Sunday, the women went to their political meetings and the men went to their political meetings. And it was all about holding your local people's feet to the fire and representing you properly. And we've lost that culturally. As we lose our going to church on Sunday, we're also losing our political glue for activism. And so part of what we're about is just to build enclaves where there's a consciousness to those three factors in your living.
Read one article that said the average age of a nun in America is 78.
I think it's like 83 now because that's old research. They're just not getting new nuns, and they get mad at me when I say they're going extinct. But come on, when the average age of a new nun is 78 to 83 years old, you're going extinct, guys. They say they're recreating themselves, and to give them credit, they are recreating themselves. They are fighting for their survival, and therefore I don't think they'll ever go completely extinct. But the only place that you see nuns and priests wearing uniforms is from very poor countries where they can't afford their own clothes. Otherwise, they don't. I personally believe that that was a misstep for the church, that they should have kept their uniform because it kept them a presence with the public. When we go out, people accost us with any particular issue they have, including suicidal obsessions. And we take the time to sit down and talk to them because that's what our uniform represents. And once the nuns and priests went incognito, the public no longer felt their presence. Of course, for me, I'm grateful for that because I feel like it pathed the way for New Age nuns.
That's fascinating. So you have people come up to you because you're in a traditional habit and say, can you help me?
Yes, and of course, we're first to say we're not Catholic nuns, and 99% of the time they say, I don't care. And why would they care if they are having extreme urgent problems, like the woman who just found out her only child care for her only job was doing drugs with her friends while she was at work, and she's taking care of her three-year-old son. This is a crisis in her life. She was a wreck. Do I quit my job? What do I do? How do I find different daycare? How do I find affordable daycare? Or the young man who said, sister, you came into my path because I was going to go home and commit suicide. And I remember sitting right down on the curb in the middle of a big protest and just staying with him for like a half hour to convince him that temporary problems, permanent solutions don't go together. I never got to meet up with him again, so I can only wonder if I helped him or not. But yes, people come to you for all kinds of problems, and usually they're not asking for anything other than an ear.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, you touched on it, but do you plant by the full moon only?
There's a lot of misunderstanding about the moon cycles. It really has nothing to do with our planting. We pretty much plant and harvest by the almanac, and that tends to be planting with the new moon and harvesting with the full moon. But that's a once in a year in the spring and once in a year in the fall. What we do every month is start a batch on a new moon of medicine, and we complete a batch on a full moon, and then those batches are labeled and tested by the laboratory before they're moved into shipping. So we have this dance we do, and it's a graceful, unrushed, slow dance that we do, that we think that if our ancient mothers were in teepees by the riverside or in caves of northern Europe, when they made their medicines, they made them slowly and gently, and they put up the tinctures on a new moon, and they completed the process on a full moon. They didn't have the lab tests, they didn't have the labeling, but the basic processes are the same, and it's a gentle kind of lifestyle dance that we do, and in how we support ourselves.
I would love to see that. That sounds amazing. Do you have TVs and phones? And obviously you do, because I talk to you but on the phone. But you have all the modern. You're not totally out of modern society. You have those things.
Oh, we're bad. We use Amazon Prime Delivery, and we have security cameras on our phones so we can see everything that's going on everywhere all the time. And we have alerts for stock going low. So we try to use as much of the good stuff that makes our life easier as we can.
A gentleman has joined us, and is he part of your religious order? Pull up a chair. Are you... Well, tell me what you do and tell me why you decided to help them.
I take photos for them. Sometimes I drive them places. I was fighting for the rights of people to be able to use cannabis legally and purchase cannabis legally in Merced. And so I showed up to a city council meeting where they were going to ban cannabis outright. And Sister Kate was there also fighting for the same rights. And so that's kind of how we met. Shortly thereafter, I went to one of my attorneys called me and said, hey, there's a Cannabis 101 being put on by the Legal Secretaries Association of Merced County, but the presentation is being done by the Merced County Sheriff's Department. You should go. And I said, okay, I'll check it out. So I went to the county building downstairs, and there's a room of like 100 chairs and two 80-year-old women at the front, and I'm way at the back of this empty room. There was a sergeant there at the time. He was a sergeant at the time doing a presentation, and he recognized me from the meeting of the week prior, and where I met Sister Kate. And I was just listening to him, and he asked me, are you an attorney? Because I was wearing a suit and tie that day, and I said, no, I'm just listening. So I made myself kind of small, but I turned my recorder on because I wanted to show, you know, my people what the Merced County Sheriff's Department angle was on cannabis. And right away he got into, you know, remember those nuns that were at that meeting last week? Yeah, well, they're safe in the city right now, but wait till they move to the county. We're going to turn them upside down and shake all their money and, you know, take all their stuff. So I was kind of shocked. So I had that on audio. So I called Sister Kate and I said, hey, remember we met last week? I said, I think I've got something you should listen to. And she said, all right. And so she gave me her address, and I came over, and I played the audio tape for him, and kind of the rest is history.
So I didn't know what to do with that. I was just starting making my salves and tinctures. I had no legal budget or anything. So I just do what I do, everything, hit him head on. The next like 2 weeks later, we're at City Council. And now this time, when I show up, there's a big group of people there, like 50 people outside there to support us and our cause, and sister and her cause. And I was a bit shocked with the group that was there. So I was a little bit holding court with these people about the fight for cannabis. And I think you were there with me, Brother Dwight. We were just kind of holding court, answering questions. And this deputy at the time, is that what he was? Sergeant at the time, he's now a lieutenant. He leans into me and says, Sister Kate, here's my card, in front of all these people, in case you want to talk. And I said, wait, aren't you the guy who just told everybody at an association meeting that you were going to bust me and shut me down? I said, wait a minute, when you were a little boy, did you dream of busting women who make salves in crock pots? Is that why you got your gun in your holster? And I said this in front of about 20, 30 people who could hear it, who all died laughing. And he goes, just call me, Sister Kate. Just call me and we'll have a chat.
Now, what do your children think about you becoming a nun?
Well, in my sister occupied days, they were horrified if I picked them up in school in Vail or did anything like that. So I had to learn to be very careful. And then over the years, I guess they've gotten used to it now, because now we're probably in... we're in 8 Christmases together where the sisters and their kids and their mates mix for holidays, and I think it's just normal now. At the beginning, there's always resistance. It's not me now that has the problem. My kids are all over it. But every new sister gets put through a new kind of hell from her own family, which will go in its own book one day. Some young girls brought to my attention that they're still under a lot of pressure by family to have babies, whether they want babies or not, and I was a little horrified because I thought we kind of put that to bed with our generation. And so now what I say to young girls, if anybody pressures you to have children when you don't want children, you say to them that once you have them, for the rest of your life, you're only going to be as happy as your unhappiest child. And if you're doing parenting right for the rest of your life, you're never going to be happier than your un... And sit with that and tell people that. And maybe they'll think about it and leave people alone, because it's a tremendous job. And let's face it, ladies, even if you have the best partner, it's motherhood is still lonely.
Do you have a store where you live and where you grow the products, or do you sell it at other places?
We had to keep up with Amazon, because people like want to place their order and then they want to know in 4 hours that you shipped that order, because that's the world we live in now. So we had to start, during the pandemic, we started stocking Los Angeles and Philadelphia for that immediate gratification of our customer base. All of our international packages still come out of Merced, but we still make all our products by hand, and we run a store, which is sistersofthevalley.org. That's our store, and that's where we sell everything, and that's where we have all our blog articles, and that's where we have all our FAQs, and that's where you can find contact information. That's where you can find out how to be an affiliate or a wholesaler, and also that's where you can find information about if you want to, like, think about starting your own sisterhood in your corner of the world. All the production happens here in Merced. We have 2 houses on our 1-acre farm, and one of the houses, the kitchen, and pretty 3/4 of the house is dedicated to the business operations. The other house is where we watch our liberal politics and take our meals together. So we make all our salves and all our tinctures and blend all our mushroom coffee in the little house next door to basically where we all live.
It really is kind of mind-boggling. It's such a unique idea that you decide to start an order and sell cannabis.
It's not that unique if you have a really bad attitude about men. I felt like I had nothing to lose by just doing what my heart desired, no matter how crazy it was. And yeah, and it ended up working out for me. But I don't know if it was brave or if it was just attitude. I was annoyed. There was nothing there. And I knew that my uniform and my veil was triggering white men having heart attacks all across the valley as we would walk up and down the street. And I didn't care. So was it bravery or brattery? I'm not sure.
But you don't have a bad attitude toward men now, because you have Brother Dwight and other men that you work with.
I always say that we're all in good health, except we have a little bit of a hearing problem. We have trouble hearing white guys over 50, and when it flares up, sometimes white guys over 40.
I understand.
The truth is, we couldn't grow without our brothers. The truth is, we couldn't, I'm talking about growing anything, growing tomatoes, growing cannabis. We couldn't grow without our brothers. We're more about making the medicine in the kitchen. The men do the growing for us. And we couldn't keep our facilities as nice as we do without the brothers, so we rely on them. And also, I don't think any of the women I've attracted here would want to be in an all-women, no-men environment. We like our men. They make our lives better.
The Catholic Church, though, has had a lot of issues lately that have been in the news about the priests and the nuns and the controversy. And have you been following that the nuns they're kind of squashing them in some ways?
Yes, because I get articles and alerts every time something happens from some nun from some country about, are you following this, Sister Kate? Are you checking this out, Sister Kate? So, yes, I feel like there's a natural friction going on right now, and it can't be helped because we've graduated into a new age of understanding between the sexes. It's just happened, and a new understanding of equality and a new understanding of 17 ways you can look at gender and sexuality. We've just all graduated now, so these old paradigms are going to have friction. I have a lot of sympathy for them, but I also do believe that the women will recreate themselves. Some of them have already begun creating their own nonprofits and separating away from the church. Some of them in Canada, Sisters of Mercy, have had their own nonprofits separate from the Pope for 100 years, and they've built their own hospitals and their own properties. There are already examples of them kind of going, okay, this isn't working for us, we're going to do our own thing, but they're doing it in a very gentle, take forever to get the patriarchy's permission kind of way.
Do Catholic nuns ever reach out to you and say, hey, we'd like your advice?
No, it goes the other way. It completely goes out the other way, where they reach out to me and say, hey, if you ever need advice, I ran a convent for, 40 years of over 60 sisters in Montreal, or I ran a convent in Poland. And so they reach out to me. And there is one particular from the Sisters of Mercy who I've used as sort of my go-to person every time I felt like quitting or felt frustrated. I go to her, and there's a couple of other. There's a Buddhist nun, interestingly enough, who's also kind of there for me. So it's women doing shit for the people and for the women. It's all the same at the end of the day, and the women don't really care about the patriarchal lines and barriers that were built.
This is very superficial, but your habits are, very old-fashioned headdresses, I think you call them. I'm wondering, does that make your life easier or harder, the fact that you have to wear those every day?
Well, we have very casual versions back at home that don't squeeze your head and they look more like a towel. Yeah. I don't know, but we have caps. Like, our formal is a three-piece, a lot of symbolism in our uniforms, in our veils, three pieces for the past, present, and future, keeping them in mind, keeping the planet Earth in mind. So, but when we are home, you can optionally wear any one of those three pieces. So you could see sisters in a headband, to a cap, to a little light stocking thing. And also, like, Sister Cass seriously gets migraines from them. So she's in them the least of all of us. It's just, we don't care. It's more about when we're out, if no one's seeing us and we're home. We did have an ex-Catholic nun with us for 2 years until she stole a car and ran away during the pandemic. But you can't fault her. A lot of people went crazy during the pandemic. But she told us that when she lived in as a Franciscan nun, they weren't allowed to show each other their hair at night at all. And we're not anything like that.
We went superficial, so there's always that question of the judge. What do you want wearing underneath there?
Well, if you spend any time in the Central Valley, it gets very hot here, so usually nothing. You can get very interesting breezes if you just let that all be under there, under these gowns. But we don't have any rules on that. I think the Mormons make all the rules about underwear. We have zero underwear rules.
This is also superficial, but it sounds like you're all right with the nuns having relationships with men.
Our thing is, we want it privatized. We don't think it's any of the public's business. And it's not so much about brand as it is about protection and privacy. The world continues to get scarier as we have more displacements of people and more shortages of natural resources. It's not going to get less scarier. And you have to rely on your tribe and their common sense. And as we have a world where everybody's social media and everybody out there, there are some things that I think that should be kept sacred. So our intimate relationships are sacred to us for that reason. We don't share them with the world. They don't get to know. We get to know, and I've only after 7 years come out about the fact that Brother Rudy and Sister Cass are together. We've been private about that for 7 years, and we've only recently come out about it because after 7 years, we think they're going to make it. No, but my thing is, we just don't feel like anybody needs to know that. Our uniforms, how we live, what we do is all about our spiritual beliefs and putting Mother Earth at the center of our walk and organizing ourselves so we can be in harmony with each other and in the way we live. And the relationships change over time, as we know. But limiting somebody to only love one person in their life doesn't work anymore when you live to be 90 years old.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you said with men, and I was going to say, and women. We don't believe in oppressing the human being, the human soul, you know. We believe in our walk together, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, as soon as I said that, I thought, wait a minute.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, at the early years, and I had young sisters, they were very militant. They wanted me to make celibacy rules. They wanted me to make no makeup rules. They wanted me to make no tattoo rules. They wanted me to make rules about having to be in veil all the time. This came from the young ones, like 20 to 25 years old, which was shocking to me. And every battle with them, every debate lost, because you don't empower women by telling them they can't wear makeup. You don't empower women by telling them they can't have a tattoo. You don't empower women by telling them they can't have intimate relationships. So that all lost. And I had to risk that my brand would spoil and blow away in the wind, but I couldn't betray what I set out to do, which is do something right for the women for a change.
That's fascinating. I read an article maybe 5 years ago about young women wanting to become nuns because they liked that it was very strict and they liked the rules. But it sounds like you're also getting women that want to join because they like the order.
Yeah, not the grown-up women. Not the women, not certainly not the baby boomers and maybe the 10 or 15 years after that or whatever that spread is, but certainly young people, I think, who've never had the dogma are craving the dogma. They've never had a nun whack a rule in their face and slam their desk. They want that stuff. Isn't it amazing the number of people? That's why we have to screen our visitors well, because we learned early on so many people have nun fantasies, and they're bizarre. From the young girl who showed up flying across the country in her pajamas with her teddy bear. We're like, wait, what? You came across the country in your pajamas and teddy bear? And she giggles at the door and says, I knew you sisters wouldn't like it. This is them wanting to have the experience of being put down by the nun. This is how ill the planet is right now.
It sounds like you're very much an advocate, you know, for trying to do something about climate change and everything you're doing.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we wish we'd be better at it. Like, we make coconut oil products, and we have been stacking up these plastic bins. They come in because there's no way to get it without the coconut oil, without plastic bins, but we want to get a super crusher machine and build a church out of them, you know? So we try to do things sustainably, and we try to do things, but there's always more we could be doing. You can find us at sistersofthevalley.org, and all our contact information is there. And our products and all our FAQs, which right at the top says we're not Catholic nuns. And anything else you need, you can reach out to us.
Well, thank you very much, Sister Kate, Sister Sophie, and Brother Dwight.
Practical man. You study him hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Coin right into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe.
days of old. Long live rock and roll. The beat of the drums loud and bold.